Now, KRXA 540 brings you food for the mind, body, heart, and soul. Here's Talking Matters with your host, Dr. Joan Kenley.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to Talking Matters. Today, we're talking about how to make your life more beautiful. And we're so pleased to have our wonderful guests. Ron Morgan, based in Oakland, is one of the most sought after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States. He has consulted as an interior designer, owned floral and antique shops, and published two wonderful books, The Center of Attention and this year, In the Company of Flowers. I love that title. He now devotes most of his creative energies to the Garden Club lecture circuit, and they all love him. I can attest to that. Ron's store is in Oakland, California, and it's called Loot. Rochelle Goodfriend, our other guest, is founder and owner of Spirited Space Design Consultants, a thriving business in the California Bay Area. She brings a unique combination of talents to her work, and I just am so bowled over by this. She's an interior designer and a psychotherapist. Wonderful combination. So welcome to both of you, and I'm so glad to ask you what I like to ask all of my guests. How did you get started in relating to flowers and spaces and design, Ron? Just what turned you on, and how old were you, and how did it all start?
As a young child, I knew I loved flowers. My grandmother was a phenomenal gardener back in Iowa. My father was a wonderful gardener. So I was always exposed to a lot of, you know, wonderful gardens and things, and I always liked working in the earth and digging up things and planting things and loved them. And about 10 years old, we had a little wonderful neighbor who entered flowers in the local fair that we had every year, flower arrangements and cut flowers. And she drugged me with her one day out there to see the old ladies putting their flowers in vases and making arrangements. And I thought, oh God, that looks like so much fun. So I went back the next day with her and I threw some flowers in a vase and did some arrangements and hung this branch over here and put a little thing over here. And ended up winning first prize. And I thought, you know.
No, you didn't win first prize.
I did. I won first prize.
At 10 years old.
10 years old. I thought, you know, this is it. This is going to be, you know, all of a sudden, this is what I'm going to love. And I just always did. I always knew that I'd spend the rest of my life from then on working with flowers and that kind of thing in nature and just enjoying it. And I've, you know, it's taken a lot of years, but I've made a wonderful niche for myself in the garden club circuit and in the museum circuit and all different clubs. I spend about 9 months a year on the road talking to garden clubs and different museums and organizations and things, antique shows, on flowers, how to do them very simply, easily, quickly, so everybody can enjoy flowers. You don't have to go, all my local florist friends are going to hate me, but not to go to a flower shop constantly. It's so much fun to someone comes to your house and says, God, your flowers are gorgeous. Who did them? You can say, you know, I did. It's just a fun thing to have.
Well, it is. And actually, I think that probably you invented a lot of the tips you have in your books and a lot of things you talk about as you went along, because didn't you discover how flowers could stay fresher or how they could stay longer?
A lot of it's common. A lot of it's just good common sense. I mean, you know, flowers, I think our whole project as flower arrangers, florists, is to bring flowers from outside, inside, bring the beauty from outside, inside, and to make it last as long as we possibly can once we get it inside. I mean, nobody wants to bring flowers in their house and have them die in 5 minutes or buy them from the flower shop, have them gone the next day. We want to extend their life as long as we possibly can. And I think, you know, you start looking at flowers, looking at the chemical part of it, and it's like cooking is all, it's all chemistry. Flowers die very quickly. We look at the water, especially in a clear container of flowers, how it gets very murky and slimy and mucky. That's what kills the bacteria that kills flowers faster than anything. And even though they'll love me for this, even though Clorox is an Oakland-based company, they've never given me a free bottle yet.
Oh, no. That's your favorite thing.
Oh, God. I've been using Clorox for like 30 years, putting about a tablespoon to the gallon of Clorox in the water. Kills the bacteria and keeps the water clean, and you don't get that ring around the edge of your container that's so hard to get out of.
It's terrible.
It just makes it, and it makes the flowers last. The best thing for flowers, everybody says aspirin, vodka, all that stuff, you know, keep it for yourself. The best thing is just good, clean water.
Well, I understand that, but also don't you have to cut the flowers?
Cut the flowers
almost every day.
Because a little, it's like when you cut yourself, it scabs over very quickly.
Exactly.
The same thing happens. Flowers are very similar to human beings.
And they need fresh water,
water
like human beings do.
And I
think I didn't realize that. I took some flower classes from you, and I think I maybe went 3 or 4 days without recutting and refreshing the water. because I'm a little bit lazy here, but doing what you suggested has made a huge difference.
They last much, much longer. I mean, you can get a tulip, some people, oh, tulips only last 2 days. You can get them to last for a week, handled properly.
Exactly.
Again, it's the amount of heat in the house, the amount of sunlight. There are a lot of different factors that, you know, factor into it. But it's the good, clean water that's the easiest thing. And again, changing the water, because I want to pick up a vase of flowers and dump the water out. The easiest thing I have found is to use a turkey baster.
Yes, I love that idea.
I can put a turkey baster in the vase. I can squeeze all the water out, refill it very simply without trying to pour a pitcher of water in and ruining a good piece of furniture. You can buy at Home Depot, Ace Hardware, any time you want to, small funnels that mm-hmm. we put in the lip of the container to pour water into it. Mm-hmm. So it makes it much, much easier to add water, free, clean, fresh water to the arrangements. And when we add water that's been mixed with a tablespoon of Clorox to the gallon, just to keep the water always constantly, constantly fresh.
Well, one of the things I want to ask you is, what was your first store? Because I know you've had antique stores and design stores and flower stores.
I was so lucky as a child. I always knew this is what I wanted to do. And when I was young, I went to school to be an art school teacher. And I went to college to be an art school teacher, and art, thank God, is my background. And I hated teaching high school kids. It was just, so I got a job through friends of my parents doing windows over at Harrods in London. So I spent 3 years in Harrods doing Harrods, and I met a couple there who owned, and I worked for a flower shop there for a while, and I got a job over in Australia doing windows, and just came back here, and I thought, well, you know, it's time to do flowers now, and just, I started a little shop down here on Grand Avenue and started doing flowers and just built up a fabulous clientele.
Rochelle, how about your own journey toward your careers and what made you so excited about both interior design and the therapy business?
Well, I grew up in Santa Monica, California, as the daughter of jewelers.
Uh-huh.
And there was now it's called the Promenade, but it was 3rd Street then in Santa Monica, and my parents had a jewelry store called Good Friends Jewelers, because of our name, obviously. So I used to love to go in there and hang out with my parents and the other people that worked there, but mostly I enjoyed seeing and playing with the jewelry, rearranging the cases. Then my mother started including me in helping her prepare for fashion shows, because they would do the jewelry in the fashion shows, and I would love it, you know, help people and then put everything back. So I love the texture, the visual, the design, all that. And then as time went on, I also, when I was in college, I decided to become a psychotherapist because I loved working with people and talking with people, hearing their stories, and really wanting the best for them in terms of help, you know, being with them to help them express themselves and have their lives become more fulfilling. So I did that for many, many years, 20 years actually, and loved it. But then for several years, as I was talking with my patients, I kept seeing, honestly, fabrics and textures. And I started picturing in my imagination where these people lived and what their place must look like. You know, I mean, I really got in there. I mean, I was listening to them, but I sort of had this whole
backstory.
And I thought, that's kind of interesting. And I complained for many years to my dear good friends that there's something else I want to be doing, and I don't know what it is. I started to do, I don't know if you've heard of Julie Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, or
yes,
you know,
I have.
That book. And I thought, okay, I got to get at something here, you know, something tangible. So I read part of it and did part of it, and then I decided on my own volition to take Friday afternoons off and see where I went and see where I did with no plan. And I kept finding myself, as I was driving around San Francisco, I kept finding myself in antique shops or Asian furniture shops or fabric stores. Or I just thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. And then I didn't do much with it. And then I was at work one day seeing patients, and all of a sudden I couldn't go on. And a friend of mine was in another office, and she came in and she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, I have to stop. Something is going on." So I actually even had a patient in the waiting room. I've never done anything like this. And I said to the patient,
this was an important moment.
A very important moment. And I just said, really sorry, I'm not feeling well. I will call you when I'm feeling better. And I decided that time to take 2 weeks off because I literally had no energy, no chi. I had no energy. I didn't feel my body at all. And I was extremely anxious. So I went home, took time off, and from that decided it just kept going on. And I ended up taking 2 months off. For a month, I didn't step out of my place. I had a 4-year-old at the time.
Well, that should have been a challenge.
That was challenging. Single mom with four.
Oh, yes. So, I can't even imagine.
So anyway, what happened is the people downstairs from where we live, the landlords at the time, suggested that if I wanted a break and just to be by myself, to use their garden studio down there. It was used before as their daughter's nanny's place, but it wasn't being used. She said, "Why don't you come down here and rest?" Well, what happened it was that I started getting grounded because I was on the ground level. Mm-hmm. And I would sit there and look outside and meditate. This all does come to an answer of your question. And as I started feeling better, I started getting stacks of magazines and stacks of books on design. And that was starting to heal me. And I actually even made a collage at the time of environments that appealed to me and all that. What I realized as I was reading is at the time, there was nothing being addressed, very little being addressed about how people feel in their environments. What happens psychologically to people? What happens spiritually to people when they're not in an environment that feeds them and nurtures them and their true essence, and what does happen for them when they are in such environments? So I went back to work, redid my office, because I started thinking, this isn't me anymore, redid my office. From that point, my patients started talking about their own creativity and started rearranging and doing their own homes, you know, not even really making the connection and saying to me, this office just feels more like you. Mm-hmm. And from that, the question was answered. I needed to be doing something. You mentioned, Ron, that you were bringing the outside in. My experience for myself was having worked with people internally for so long, being witness to them and collaborating with them to bring their inside out so that their environments were really in sync with them so they could feel more self-enhancement and joy.
So this integration really goes together. So we're going to have an awful lot to keep talking about because it's outside in and inside out, and it's all inspiring. Do you think that your home environment affects the rest of your life? That's a question we're going to answer in our next segment. And we're going to ask you, are you happy with how you live? Ron and Rochelle will be right back to discuss how you can have your own personal style. So stay tuned.
Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley will continue in a moment on KRXA 540. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues now on KRXA 540.
You're listening to Talking Matters, and I'm Joan Kenley. Hello again. We're talking about how to make your life more beautiful. And with us today, we have Ron Morgan and Rochelle Goodfriend. And Ron is based in Oakland and is one of the most sought-after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States. And Rochelle is founder and owner of Spirited Spaces Design Consultants, a thriving business in the California Bay Area. So here we are with much more to say. We were just talking about whether we work from the inside out to make our environment what we want it to be or from the outside in. And frankly, it doesn't matter if it comes in diagonally. But we want to know, first of all, how you would both describe home and home environment as a sanctuary for what we could say is heart, mind, body, soul, you know, the whole person.
I think home is what makes, you know, what works for you. I mean, I don't think there's any one pattern or any one particular design or space that works for everybody. Everybody has, you know, different likes and different needs. I think people come to my house and say, oh my God, who wants all this stuff? And I said, you know, don't worry, your name's on it when I die, who cares? And I go to people's houses who have nothing, minimal, and I think, you know, God, I could live like that. I mean, there's so many different possibilities out there. The fun of having a house or an environment is collecting piece by piece, creating it yourself, saying, oh, every house having its own personal stamp on it.
Right. In fact, some of the furniture I have in my living room, a friend of mine found on the street, one of the couches in New York. She was dressed up to go to a party, and she hired a van. Then she changed to modern furniture and gave me this beautiful Victorian couch. So you see, things are picked up from here, from Goodwill, from flea markets.
And it's fun walking through a house, and for the person themselves especially, is walking through and remembering, oh, that painting came from here.
Yeah.
I was on my vacation in Italy. I think I got this. I know where this came from. So it has a personal meaning to it. I mean, a lot of times, I'm sure you do, Rochelle, I walk into clients' homes and I think, you know, who lives here?
Right.
You know, what's the identity?
Someone decorated this. There's not a picture frame with a portrait in it. There's nothing there with a personal touch to it. And I think, you know, oh my God, how could you live like this? But I mean, I think, you know, again, thank God, everyone does live the same.
I think, too, just to follow up with what you're saying is about home. I know when I step into someone's home and it's an expression of who they are, I feel different. If it's an expression of who they are, mm-hmm. again, it's that inside out. You
right.
can feel, if you're sensitive to people and your friends and your family, you can kind of feel if it's in sync with them. And that, more importantly, that the people that live there feel that way. So that
they're
goes
happy.
With you. Right, they're happy. So oftentimes I'll go to a person's house who's hired me, you know, for initial consult, and then we take it from there. And over the phone, I'll kind of get some information, and they'll say, you know, I really don't know what I want, or this doesn't feel right, and I like the shape of this room, but I don't know what I would do. I'll say, get yourself some magazines, some design magazines, some home magazines, and go through them and turn off your brain and pay attention to your heart and your eyes and what appeals to you, and just rip
what
out those pages.
Yeah.
And just rip out pages. Don't say to yourself, oh, but this doesn't go with this, or that doesn't go with this, and this. Just do it, and then have yourself a folder, and then we can go over that. And then when I sit with the person, you know, you can ask them, well, what do you like about this
yes.
picture? What works for you? Is there anything in here that doesn't work for you? And that, these are specifically for people that don't trust themselves, or don't even know how to access
their
talents
interests. May be in some other direction.
Right.
Because
exactly.
they have all
of course.
These kinds of talents
of course.
In the world. I couldn't be an accountant to save my soul. But we need accountants in the world, and we need people who are doing science and math and rocket trips and all that kind of thing. So those of us who are more familiar with environment can help those who want to
Absolutely.
Have a homey place.
And, you know, I have a lot of clients and a lot of friends who are wonderful cooks, but aren't really tasteful when it comes to decorating, or fabulous clothes sense.
Yes.
Or wonderful garden sense. But, you know, it doesn't transfer all the time. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't transfer from place to place to place.
That's a great
and sometimes
way to say
the
it.
Interest isn't there.
It isn't there.
So it's,
you know,
that's
I
fine.
I think, you know, the difference I always find, I tell my colleagues, you know, is yours is not a house, it's a home. There's a difference between a house
yeah,
and a home.
Definitely.
When I walk into someone's home, I can think, oh, this just reeks of you. This is, I know this is your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And you can tell because you're comfortable here, you like what's here, you've done a fabulous job with it. Your kids are happy, your husband's happy to come home. It just, you know, you give a lot of parties, your friends are all very happy to come here.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. People whose homes are not, you know, is what they think they should be, don't entertain. I know people who never have people over for dinner.
I know those people
who
too,
never have
and I don't understand
dinner.
That. I mean,
not even for
not even for
a McDonald's burger. They just don't like having people in the house. Oh, it's not quite right yet, or, you know, they're so afraid to make a decision,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and it's, you know, it's so simple. It's
yes,
so easy
yes.
to say, you know, I think my basic philosophy is one of is that the whole world operates on color.
Mm-hmm.
Color is
yep.
the essence of life.
That's,
I mean, you know, there are happy colors, there are sad colors. Color attracts us to food, to clothes, to cars, to people. Color attracts us to everything.
And
it's
a very good point.
It's colors what makes the whole world go around. And it's
a sense then of putting all those colors together that again fit the mood you're in and the place you're in.
Exactly.
And I talk about my son Roland on this show from time to time. And the biggest compliment I ever had about putting this house together was when he would bring his schoolmates home when he was 11 or 12, and he would race them through the house to show them the unusual things I had decided to do, like painting a fish pond on the floor of the bathroom and stuff like that. And so that was a huge compliment to me that he was celebrating what I had done because, you know, even my best friends can say, oh, great work, Joan, but my son, that was a good thing.
Yeah, that is a good thing.
And
yeah.
Also, you probably talk about families in your therapy.
Oh, yeah.
How do the children work in with the design of the home?
Well, there's a couple things I wanted to say. Oh, yeah.
We have so much to talk about.
I know, there's so much to talk about. Something that Ron said triggered something for me. It's about that the person that lives there needs to feel like they belong there, that mm-hmm. they reside there. So, for instance, a friend of mine she lives in the Midwest, had her whole house done. It's beautiful. Wow. It's like French country, so on. And it's beautiful, but people would come into her house and say, you know, this is really beautiful,
it's
not you.
It's a display window in the store somewhere.
It was the designer's
idea
look.
Of mm-hmm. the
and
look.
I'm just so much in belief of this for myself and my work is that I don't want my style to be in the person's home, whatever my style is. I want to influence and collaborate with people, but not dictate
right.
what they do.
So you're a guide.
A guide. You know, I mean, I do the shopping and
sure,
all that
sure,
stuff,
sure.
but a guide to really help people feel like they're more a part of their environment.
I think that's the good point. I think that so many decorators and florists, you walk into a room and think, oh, God, this is done by so-and-so. I can tell a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
This is so... And even with clothes, obviously, you know, Armani, who was so fabulous, you can tell this stuff a mile away. But, I mean, there's some stuff that you shouldn't have your name stamped on it, like you say. I like when somebody has a party and we do the flowers for it. So it looks like, oh, God, you did a fabulous choice. They have their own personal... Mm-hmm. Looks like exactly something she would do in her house or something she would have chosen.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't something I think, oh, this is really gorgeous. You have to have this.
Exactly. And I think what we're also talking about is being eclectic.
Eclectic.
In other words,
yes.
Not every room has to be the same formula. One room might be the rumpus room, and you might put all leather or something in there or bean bags or whatever and have another design in another room altogether.
Or because it's a rumpus room, put French gold furniture in it. You know, go a little off the wall sometimes. It doesn't have to be matchy-matchy.
That's right. Matchy-matchy. You know, the Eichler homes, the old Eichler homes.
Oh, God.
Remember those in the 50s?
And tell our audience who they are.
Okay, the Eichler homie, he was an architect and had a very specific, again, bringing the outside in, and doing it in a very simple way. I mean, they weren't constructed real solidly. But they had a particular design that was very simple, lots of glass, lots of wood, pretty simple and affordable. At the time. Well, now, Eichler, the design is coming back. People are redoing their properties, a lot down on the East Bay, a lot in Marin, and these properties have skyrocketed. So I was asked to redesign one in Palo Alto, and the woman did not know where to start with this. I mean, she knew she wanted to do something, and she had really oversized pieces in the house, which does not go with the Eichler look. So she didn't know where. So I said, "Do you have anything that you love? Inspiration piece. This mm-hmm. goes to having an inspiration piece. If you don't know where to start, do you have anything that you love that we may not be seeing?" And she remembered she got a rug in Turkey 6 years before.
Stuck
that was stashed in the closet. And I said, "Let's bring it out." Oh, but it's way back there. You want to just see a corner of it? I said, no, let's bring it out. Let's put it down. Put it down in the living room. And wouldn't you know, that became her piece. So she was able to buy things. It was her speaking.
So it seems that when you both are talking, that you're using your intuition about your design sense, but you're using your intuition
to reinforce their good taste, their choices.
You're tuning into them, and you're tuning into your knowledge, and you're putting it all together as if you're creating a painting almost, but it's three-dimensional.
And it makes them feel more comfortable with it when they think that, you know, their professional agrees. I always let them kind of say, oh, I like this, and then I kind of back up their judgment. So it makes them feel much more comfortable when somebody professional is backing them up. Let them think they made the choice.
And
they
That's
just
wonderful.
They get into it. I mean, you know, everybody has such, you know, a wonderful self-worth.
Yes.
You just need to bring it out in them.
And that's what we're talking about today, and talking matters in every way as we move now to close this segment. And you have to stay tuned because we all know what a difference flowers make. And Ron has lots to tell about what works where and when, plus how to put more blooms in your life. And he'll also explain what tablescapes are. Don't go away.
Ready for more? Log on to joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment here on KRXA 540. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues now on KRXA 540.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to Talking Matters, and we're having such a good time today talking about how to make your life more beautiful. And we're so pleased to have Ron Morgan and Rochelle Goodfriend with us. And as I've told you, Ron is based in Oakland and is one of the most sought-after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States. And Rochelle Goodfriend is founder and owner of a wonderful business called Spirited Spaces Design Consultants, and it's in the California Bay Area. And welcome back. And Ron, we're going to focus on flower arranging for this segment. So let's just start out with, what do you think people should know first about flower arranging?
Well, I think the most important thing is that, you know, for people to realize that there is no such thing as a perfect flower arrangement.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it can be a few buds tossed in a Kerr Mason jar to an extravagant $50,000 centerpiece at a wedding. I mean, it's everybody's own interpretation of it. I mean, I think just if people just bring flowers in the house, the few things you pick in the yard or buy, you know, tons at a flower shop, it's fine.
And we can go to places like Home Depot
and get
really good prices.
Trader Joe's, we should be paid for this. But it's amazing. I do a lot of talks to garden clubs and things and to ladies' organizations. And I'll say, you know, you don't have to have a million of the flowers. Let me loose for 15 minutes in Albertsons or Lucky's or a store that sells flowers and produce.
And Safeway has great roses, too.
I'll make you 20 centerpieces in an hour. And I walk through with just kind of tunnel vision looking at color combinations. Mm. I never mix colors in a flower arrangement. It's either all yellow, all green, all pink, all white,
but
all blue.
But you do the shading.
I never mix colors back and forth, but it's all different tints, tones, and shades of the same thing. We have to realize, too, that most of our parties, most of our dinner parties and things, and weddings and things, are done under artificial light.
Well, that's a good point.
Or at nighttime, where color dies. So we have to always use things. Everything you look at in the world either has a blue or a yellow cast to it.
Okay.
The two most prominent colors in the entire color perspective. Always try to find things with a yellow cast because it reflects light as opposed to absorbing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a yellow green or a yellow pink or a yellow above, every color has a yellow tint to it somewhere. Find the yellows that are going to reflect the light and look lively at night again. And again, when I'm doing flowers for someone's house, I look through produce. I mean, I use a lot of, you know, broccoli flower I adore right now, that chartreuse green combination of broccoli and cauliflower. But a green, when you look at it, that's a bud from a flower. It's the same plant chain. You look at the artichokes, they're a bud from a flower. You look at an eggplant, it's a seed pod from a plant.
Absolutely.
So I use a lot of produce, and it's not a very pretty word to use, but I like sometimes the guts I can get with some big, heavy produce in among these delicate flowers. And a lot of times I find that, you know, the textural contrast, using a great big, huge bowl of these rough, tough artichokes and shove a couple little gardenias in among them.
That's wonderful, textural contrast.
You know, that rough against the smooth, you look at it, you see it, you think, isn't that fun? You'll be the first kid in your block to have something that, besides a bunch of baby's breath and roses in the middle of the dining room table.
No.
It's
and
fun.
In fact, when I took one of your design classes, you said roses aren't shiny flowers. And you said put shiny leaves with them, like camellia leaves or magnolia leaves. And that just zipped everything up for me right away. Of course, I am not for baby's breath, never have been.
Always try to find as many, you know, wonderful yellow chartreuse. We forget, too, how wonderful chartreuse green and how wonderful foliages are.
Oh, fabulous.
I mean, every plant has fabulous foliage. Every flower has wonderful foliage around it.
And in your backyard.
It's that foliage that makes that flower stand out.
Exactly.
So always by including a lot of wonderful foliages behind the flowers in the arrangement makes them pop. And when you're looking at a, you know, out in the yard, you see flower first, foliage is a background. Mm-hmm. So when I'm doing a bouquet of flowers for someone's house, I do all the foliages, all the fruits, berries, seed pods, things first. Then I go back and tuck a few flowers in. You use much fewer flowers that way, and you put the flowers in last. They're on top. They're going to stand out and be wonderful against this background. It's like a painter does. You just do layer, 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 and the last thing you put on are the bright highlights, which the flowers add to the centerpiece.
Well, sure. And one of the things I learned was the word mechanicals from you in the design class. And explain a little bit about that. People need to know about oasis and stones and the tape that you tape things down with. Tell us about that.
Well, it's mechanics, you know. It's like building a house. You have to have a fabulous foundation for the rest of it goes up or it's not going to stay there. And so I find oasis, I mean, when I started doing flowers 50 years ago, there was not oasis. We used to use just fern and rocks and moss and all that. Oasis is a, you can buy it at any craft store now, art store, supply store,
flower store,
wholesale flower markets all have it. And it's a baked styrofoam brick.
Mm-hmm.
And it will absorb 50 times its own weight in water. Mm. It's like a sponge.
And didn't you tell us to water it the night before?
You soak this, and do not try to push it underwater and soak it. Fill a tub full of water, lay a brick of oasis on top, and it will sink by itself in a few minutes. Sometimes by trying to push it underwater and doing it quick, you know, submerging it really fast, what'll happen is you'll trap some air bubbles in sometimes. And you'll get a whole bouquet of flowers done. One or two will die for no reason. You think, what happened? And they've hit an air bubble. They're not drawing water. They're drawing just air.
Mm-hmm.
Let it just sink by itself, put it into the container. And again, when I'm soaking oasis, I soak it in water with Clorox in it.
Exactly. That
bacteria stuff to keep it clean always. And then I pack the bowl almost as tight as I possibly can with oasis inside. And it sounds dumb, too. You look at a block of oasis, it has writing on one side. That side usually should go up.
Interesting.
It's bait with little cones in it to hold water. That side, as the side's up, it holds much more water. It's heavy when it gets that much water.
Oh, it's very heavy, yes.
So you don't have to have all this tape and rope and chicken wire and stuff to hold all the flowers down.
But also choosing the right containers.
The right container. The flowers and the container should be like a happy marriage.
Yeah.
You want the flowers to show, not the container. I just did a garden club talk for the girls in Santa Barbara, and they said to me, Ron, you just bring buckets of flowers because we're going to bring our own problem containers for you to use. And I thought, this will be a cinch, you know. I got down there and I looked from the stage out in the audience and I thought, Ron, you've made a horrible mistake. And my first comment was, girls, just because something has a hole in it doesn't mean it's supposed to hold flowers. Some things are meant to be purely decorative.
Okay.
You know, some things are decorative items. They're not meant to hold flowers.
I agree with you.
And
you have to look at where you're going to
actually put the flowers.
Where you're going to put it down.
Placement is very important. I mean, you know, when I walk into a room, a client's house, if it's an all blue and white room and it's got a little tiny touch of yellow in a pillow somewhere, I'm going to ignore the blue and white. I'm picking up the yellow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to fight anything else. The little tiny touch of yellow will be the best thing in that room. And just, you know, you should not, again, walk into a room and have the flowers slap you in the face. They should be very subtle. When you get finally dressed, you finish dressing, you put on a little piece of jewelry that finishes off the outfit. That's what the flower should do to a house.
Right.
It should look like a fire sale somewhere.
Right. But if you're going to have daytime entertaining and nighttime entertaining, you've talked about what draws the light at night, and we know that the yellows and the chartreuses. But if you're going to have a daytime entertainment, what are the fun flowers to use for daytime?
I mean, the same thing in daytime, basically. I try to use anything that's got a yellow or a yellow cast to it. I love just great big huge bowls of lemons. We're so spoiled in California here. We can pick citrus fruit and things from our yards constantly.
Right.
I mean, I travel the country doing this 9 months a year. I mean, go back east this time of year and say, oh, yeah, pick some citrus fruit, girls. They look at you like you're crazy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But we're so spoiled. But we can walk out in our yards and pick, you know, just greens and foliages.
And we can put kumquats in a vase and stick the flowers in.
Yeah. And, you know, and a few daffodils coming out of it.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful. The only flower to the daffodils are very poisonous. You can only use daffodils, narcissus, and things by themselves. They're very poisonous.
Oh.
That's why the deer don't eat them, the skunks don't eat them, the rabbits don't eat them. They're very poisonous. If you put them with like blue iris or any other spring flowers, it'll kill them in a second.
It'll take
a day or two off their lives. Any flower gives off an oxide or a sap to the bottom of it, mm-hmm. which is sometimes a poisonous. And if you use a lot of times silver, any metal container, I've got lots of thousands of tips after doing this for 1,000 years.
Right, and I've
looked
listening.
Out a lot of great tips. We all love to use our fancy silver and everything. And if you've used silver before and put flowers in it and it's pitted it and left scars in it.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the, again, it's not the water that does it. It's the sap, it's the juice from the flower that will etch the holes in that.
You said daffodils and chrysanthemums?
No, daffodils, paper white, narcissus, anything in that, that family is a poisonous thing.
That's a very good thing to
know. So what I've learned is I use cans and cans of Pam when I'm anybody's party I'm doing, and it's a metal, especially metal.
Mm-hmm.
There's always silver, there's always oxides coming from metals and things too that will interact with the flowers and things. Mm-hmm. So I always spray any metal container first with Pam. So the water cannot
idea.
Get so the water cannot get to the container, and the container fumes cannot get to the flowers. And again, it keeps the surface, that brass, from really tarnishing inside where the water's in it,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps the flowers from pitting holes in the silver, and it doesn't hurt the flowers at all. It just makes, you know, the water and the oil don't mix.
No, of course
it doesn't
not.
Get to the flowers.
No, but when you have a glass vase, for instance, and you get that milky, watery
that's
thing.
That's the Clorox.
And the Clorox stops that, but if, let's say, from the family you've inherited some vases and they, I've been using some rubbing compound, you know, like you get at the auto store.
To clean them?
To clean the inside of the glass.
Well, that'll scratch it too.
Will it?
If you get a container that's really nasty and dirty inside, the best thing I think to do is just fill it up full of water and put Effordent or Polydent from your full teeth in it.
Oh, now that I didn't know about, because I know the Clorox won't do the job.
The Effordent and the Polydent, that'll, anything you use to clean false teeth with, just throw it a couple capsules in the
good
water.
Good idea.
And it'll just eat that. A lot of times your decanters, you know, if you use your liqueur canners, mm-hmm. if you get, lose them, they get
milky inside too.
Just throw Effordent in it or whatever from the false teeth and just cleans it right out.
Now, you're giving lots of commercials today.
Oh, yes.
Halloween, yeah.
We're going for it here. Well, one of the things that you did that was so interesting in one of the classes was you took small watermelons and you scooped them out, and then you did some flower arrangements inside. But you also, what is this oil of clove or something that you stick in?
Also, again, when you use fruits and vegetables, we know that when you cut them, their life is coming to an end.
Sure.
You're taking away, you know, minutes from them. The best thing I have found, I use a lot of oranges, apples, lemons, things in arrangements. And when I put them into an arrangement, I usually put a wooden pick in them to make them, as for my mechanics.
Right.
And the best thing is, it's an old early American settlers thing, is how I got it from. When you stick a clove, that's how they used to preserve their vegetables. Fruits and vegetables, we'll stick a clove in it to put it down the cold cellars.
Mm-hmm.
So I found by sticking a clove in the blossom end of apples, oranges, and lemons things, or if I stick my picks I'm going to put into the fruit, into oil of cinnamon, oil of cloves first, then putting it into the piece of fruit, it will seal off the puncture. Then it will last, like Christmas time, I can get apples to last 2 months.
Oh, that's fabulous. Fabulous.
So instead of rotting overnight.
Interesting. Right,
oil
right.
of cinnamon, oil of cloves, it's just chemical. It's just something, it happens,
they
will
great.
Last.
Well, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of this segment. It's coming so fast. But in your book, The Center of Attention and the Company of Flowers, there are pictures of your arrangements that people can use to inspire themselves to use this wonderful cascade.
Don't copy, inspire.
But don't copy, inspire, because that's what you did for me. I couldn't copy what you do, but I am inspired by what you do. I'm willing to try almost anything if you give me the right tips to do it with. So thank you for all of your suggestions, and we'll be coming back. What we want to ask everybody to stay tuned for is your house a magnet for mess? Rochelle has some great ideas to share about managing clutter and just how much fun you can have doing it. I really want to hear that part, so everybody stay tuned.
Invite your friends and family to listen to Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley every Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m., right here on KRXA 540. Found it, and it's different. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley, right here on KRXA 540.
I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to Talking Matters, and we're so glad to have you back to listen to more about how to make your life more beautiful. And our guests are Ron Morgan and Rochelle Goodfriend, and we've told you that Ron is based in Oakland, and we're so glad that he is, and he's nearby, and he's one of the most sought-after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States. And Rochelle Goodfriend is founder and owner of Spirited Spaces Design Consultants. It's a thriving business in the California Bay Area, and you're going to tell us what we can do to unclutter ourselves. And I don't know anybody who doesn't have some clutter, no matter what room it is stashed in. But tell us about it, Rochelle.
Well, first of all, I will say I'm not a home organizer. I'll tell you what I'm not. not a home organizer. I'm not someone, you know, I'm not a professional at that. There is
there
a professional, absolutely. But so what I see when I go into a home or an office space is a vision, you know, after talking with the people that live there or work there, a vision of what can be.
I like that idea.
You know, taking what the client has said, and we, you know, we put that together and ask questions, so on and so forth. But to get to that vision, things have to happen. And you need to clear the space, you need to organize the space, you need to be able to see what you're going towards. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, taking a hike. You want to, you know, look at what you're going towards and just keep, you know, keeping in mind you're going towards that and you're noticing all the beautiful trees and the lakes and all that, but you're, you know, you're moving forward. The same thing with a home. So recently I saw a client came, asked me to come over to consult with them about how to organize. They collect unbelievable American art. So it's all that early California art. I mean, mm-hmm. lots of it, lots of antiques and lots of rugs. And you couldn't appreciate it in the space because there was so much going on in that house, so much clutter that I couldn't do the work with her. And so I was honest with her and I said, you know, I can see what can happen. I can see that there's going to be a beautiful outcome in this because you have extraordinary pieces here. But let's talk about making room for those pieces to shine. So I actually brought in a professional organizer that worked with the family for days getting stuff out.
But I bet that was hard because people are attached. I mean, they wouldn't be there if they weren't attached.
Never coming to my house, honey.
Very. But I'm not saying they got rid of everything. I am not saying that. So the way I think of it is you have three boxes. One that you have no problem giving away. You put the stuff in there as you go through books. Or, if
or
you
give
go
to
through,
the children. Or you,
well, no, but one, yeah, right. One thing you give away, you toss out, whatever. The other, you know you want to keep. If there are books that are important to you, whatever it is, mm-hmm. record, whatever. You keep that. And then the one in the middle are things you're not quite sure about, but you have to be honest with yourself. You can't just say,
here.
Yeah, is this something, I'm just not feeling comfortable making a choice right now. I'm going to put it in here. But by a month's end, it's going to go in one of the other boxes.
Oh, that's an interesting strategy.
So that you're not pressuring people to make choices mm-hmm. about things that they may not be ready. You know, again, it's like respecting who you're working with here.
Right.
And
so
what's
it's a journey. They
to people.
Have to go through this choice they journey.
They do, yeah, yeah. And the other thing that I think is so important, and it's becoming more and more important to me as I get older, is really having a pal or a partner or a professional person with you as you go through this
because
process.
It's emotional.
It's emotional, and it's, you know, it can be fun. It can be emotional. It can keep your energy going. So this man and wife were much more willing to do this, having someone by their side. And they also had an extensive basement area. They redid the whole basement. And my feeling is if your basement is a mess and there's a lot going on there, that's the foundation of your life. That's the foundation of your home.
And that's what most people do is stuff everything down.
You stuff everything down and you it's okay if you put things down there, but again, you want to do it in an organized manner. You know, now there's so many, you know, they've got so many containers at Target and
Hold Everything, Ross, Hold Everything, container stores,
you know, all that. You can get them really inexpensive or you can get really beautiful ones if you want to keep some things stashed on the home level. But I again, tying in your idea of, you know, spiritual, you want to have the foundation clear and solid in your home, in yourself, so that you can operate from that place in creating things that you want in your environment. If that's a mess, you're a mess. So that's how I come into the project. And then even with bookshelves, you know, a lot of people keep paperback books that they read a million years ago and
they'll never read them again.
So I really encourage people to do whatever they need to with that. And then with hardback books, I've suggested that people take the covers off the hardback books. Keep the covers in another place because you want those covers. That's what makes them valuable. But you can get beautiful colors, an array of beautiful colors on just the book binding.
The inside bindings.
Mm-hmm. And it makes, you know, if you're doing bookshelves that are alongside a fireplace or something,
yes.
And then you put, you know, accessories that are beautiful next to it, but you look and there's just an array of beautiful colors. You're not seeing the torn pages and mm-hmm. all that stuff is not good energy to have around you. You want fresh, the color, you want to be able to see what you're going to be reading. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want anything covering it. And so those are some of the things that I offer in terms of organizing so that we can get to the vision of the final project.
And once the space is opened up, then I suppose you can get more of the artistic ideas around what that space can
That's
have.
Right.
I mean, a crown molding in a ranch-style house does wonders.
It's amazing.
And
it's
changing amazing. What the window sashes look like. And I mean, when we moved into this house, it was all aluminum windows and sliding doors, and what we put in the French doors and the wooden casings, and it changed the whole feel of the house.
Yeah,
it was like a whole new house.
Yeah. Well, a client of mine called me a few years ago, and just to tag on to what you're saying, and she said, you know, I have a happy home, and my happy home is in Sebastopol, and I love my happy home, but I don't like my home in the city. It's very cold. I don't like to bring people in here. I don't have people over, and I want to feel better about this home, too. So I went over there just to, you know, what you said about the crown molding, and it was true. It was stark white. She had beautiful pieces of art that were not showing up because the white walls. It was just the wrong white can be lovely.
But on the other hand, I just have to insert this here. I mean, 15, 20 years ago, everybody wanted white walls. I mean, it was deadly. I mean, I did it myself. And then, whoa, is it coming back?
Coming back.
Oh, Ron.
But not, I would imagine the blue white walls are not coming back.
Ice white.
The ice white walls.
The white is the white. White walls in a house are coming back again. Well, it goes in like 25
years. Well, things go in cycles. Okay.
They go in cycles.
Must mean I'm getting older. Okay. All right.
But for this particular client, we put up the crown molding throughout the house. Instant change.
Oh.
And not expensive.
Right.
Instant change. And then we did the colors, which, you know, at that time, you know, it really worked to have the colors. And she was feeling so much better about her home that now she has a happy home here as well.
But and it's great to say happy home.
Happy
I mean, that's a wonderful thing to say.
It's a nice way to feel about your house.
It's a nice way to feel about your house. We went into, since I'm on this particular client, I went with her into every room in the house. We went to her back room. I love this client. I just love it. She's from New York. Real straightaway, straight talker, just crazy about her. We had a lot of fun working together. So we go to the back room where her bedroom is. And she was single, and she really wanted to meet somebody. She really wanted a relationship. We go to her bedroom, and everything is stark white, chrome, cold colors.
There not was, very sexy.
There was not one feminine, cozy, yummy thing in that room. And I said, Doris,
yes,
this has got to change. Right now, we're changing this. You want a relationship? You want to feel good about bringing someone in here? We got to change this. So we did, and then we finished the work together. She phoned me back about it. Well, actually, I called her because I check in with my clients periodically, and she said, well, you know what? I met my guy, and she said, you know, it all worked out. You know, you should tell people, change your room, change your sex life.
No, it's just that sounds like a title of a book. Change your room, change your sex life.
And you got to drag somebody into the room. That's the hard part.
Right.
Come on over. Well, this is so much fun. So we're going to wrap up this wonderful idea of getting a happy home into our lives. And then we're going to ask you in hour two, are you thinking of redecorating? And why are color choices so important? And what about all the makeover shows that they're having on television lately? We'll talk about that. And we'll be hearing answers from Ron and Rochelle, and I might have a few ideas too. And there are some fascinating projects that they want to tell you about too. So you keep listening, and we'll keep talking, and we'll be right back.
Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley will continue in a moment on KRXA 540. You found it, and it's different. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley, right here on KRXA 540.
Okay, we're back with hour two, and I'm so glad you're listening because this is Talking Matters, and as Joan Kenley, your host, I'm having such a wonderful time with our guest because we're talking about how to make your life more beautiful. And Ron Morgan, who's based in Oakland, is one of the most sought-after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States. And Rochelle Goodfriend is founder and owner of Spirited Spaces Design Consultants, a thriving business in the California Bay Area. And we're going to talk about some interesting stories that both Ron and Rochelle have about how they work with people that maybe don't feel that they can actually get in the swing of things and what they've been able to do to turn the situation around. So you want to start off, Ron?
Oh, I have lots of them. But one of my most fun stories is every mother, when that little girl gets married, starts planning the wedding.
Indeed.
You know? And a wedding, people are nowadays on the impression a wedding has to cost a small fortune.
It's true.
You know, and it does not have to be, you know, I always say to the parents, this is not a payback dinner. Everybody coming to that wedding should have known those kids for at least 10, 15 years. This is not your friends, it's the kids' friends.
Good point.
Who are coming to this wedding. So, which cuts down the size of it. And I had a family, wonderful, I mean, adorable people I've known for years, and he had gone through a hard time business-wise with the stock exchange, blah, blah, blah. And I said to the mother, I know you want to have this wedding for your daughter. I know you've had this planned. I said, let's make this happen. I said, you know, how much fun will it be to have 20 of your special friends involved in this? I said, I will, in my warehouse, I'll get all the glass vases, all the things organized. You invite 20 of your friends. I will go to the flower market. I will buy the flowers wholesale. You have 20 friends down. You bring coffee and rolls, and let's have them all make the centerpieces.
Oh, wow.
So I saw how the friends all got to be involved in it, saying, oh, look, I made that one. I said, I'll bet you girls when you go to the wedding tomorrow, you will not know who made what centerpiece on what table.
How exciting.
And so 20 of her good friends came down, and I did a sample, and they all put flowers in the vases, and we went back, and we fluffed up a couple of them, and but they had more fun doing it. So everybody got to take part in the wedding, plus just be a guest.
And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to hear the conversations and the fun that they were having.
You know, and everybody said, I can't give a shower for the girl, but I can do this, or I can't do this, or I can do this. It was fun just having everybody get involved in the party. And I think a lot of times it's fun. I do it a lot with parties. I'll just sometimes do for ladies' luncheons. I mean, everybody loves to set the table
Right.
I'll put the napkins in a great big pile. All right, fine. You're in charge of folding napkins.
Oh, good.
You're in charge of putting place cards around. So everybody has a job. Make them feel important. You know, drag them into it. You know,
and it makes the whole event then have
more fun.
More juice.
Well, and it gives it more personalization to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So many things we go to are so cold and impersonal or business and everything. Oh, my God, do I have to sit through this? If it isn't that way. I mean, most times when I do dinner at my house, I'm always saying, oh God, comfort dinner, blah, blah, blah. And I have all these people who don't even know each other, which is, what you should not do, but it works most of the time, is I always try to have a very interesting centerpiece. Something that isn't just run of the mill. And they sit down, you have to figure too, they're looking at that centerpiece for 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's the middle of the table night long. Even at a wedding or a party, that centerpiece is the most important thing there. You can skimp on the food, skimp on the tablecloths and everything else, but the centerpiece, the flowers are important. It's the mood you set that makes the party. People remember the flowers long after they won't remember what they had to eat.
Right, and also they'll remember probably the conversation.
Right.
We were talking at the break about the fact that a great conversation is sometimes started by...
Conversation is what makes a dinner party. It isn't the food, it isn't the flowers, it isn't, the guest list. It's the conversation among the guests. So we have to keep the flowers low enough to talk over, which is very important.
But very important.
But by having something that's just different. I had a wedding 2 weeks ago, and I was out of town, actually, giving a garden club talk somewhere, and the MOB kept calling me saying, what are we going to have in the middle of tables? I said, honey, if I tell you...
The MOB is...
The mother of the bride.
Thank you.
I thought it was something he couldn't say on
the
air.
The MOBs and MOGs. Okay. The MOG, you wear beige and just show up in the room. But I tell the mother of the bride, you know, she said, what are we going to do in the tables? I said, I can't tell you. If I tell you over the phone, you'll think, ugh, and throw up. But when you see it, you're going to just think it's to die for and gone to heaven. I said, what are we going to do? I said, honey, when I get there, I'm getting home Friday night at midnight. When I arrive at the wedding on Saturday up in Hillsburg, you'll think they're fabulous. So I went back and got those centerpieces all made and drug them up to Hillsburg and put them to table. And she goes, oh, my God, those are fabulous. I said, but if I had have told you I was having big bowls of green apples, green cabbages, a little bit of, you know, blooming cabbages, a little bit of kales, white and
yes,
green kales,
yes, yes.
And greens of green cymbidium orchids, green orchids for
oh,
centerpieces.
Fabulous.
You'd have thought, ugh, cabbage for the centerpiece? You'd have thought, ugh, God, not for my friends. But when you see the combination yeah. of the unexpectedness of, oh, my God, cabbages and orchids, what a vile combination. But how beautiful one makes the other one. And as soon as everybody sat down, their conversation was, oh, God, isn't that a pretty combination? Right. Oh, how unusual. It got the whole thing.
It got the whole conversation
something
going.
To talk about. People exactly. didn't know each other from Seattle to, you know, Los Angeles to New York. Oh, my God, isn't that a wonderful combination? Isn't that fun? You know, who would think of doing that? It got the whole group talking about something.
Exactly.
You got them and all
so
involved in it somehow.
It's a spirit that comes
right.
into the room
it
when you have that
all
kind
together.
Of camaraderie. So you have a story for us then about a client who you inspired.
I don't know if this is what you're referring to, but I do have a few stories. But there was a woman that I worked with who, kind of like I said before in one of the other segments, if you're not comfortable in your environment, if it's not representing who you are, things are not working in a flow in
right.
your life. The
and
way
as a
they
therapist,
maybe...
though, that you're going to notice things that
yes.
another designer might notice
yes.
because, let's say, people who are depressed often don't want to get out of bed, don't want to make their bed, don't want to clean up their drawers, don't want to actually do anything pretty in their house. So this is what you can read in their profile
yeah.
that would get them sort of to move off of that particular depressive cycle.
Yes, yes. And I do have... queries. I have a whole list of questions that I ask clients that are such that you're describing that really are paralyzed about what to do, or they don't even know how bad the environment is. So I start by asking very specific questions and take them through a process such as the simple ones. What do you like? In this room, what don't you like? Mm-hmm. What things work for you? How do you want to feel in this room? What do you want to leave in this room when you go out of the room? Who do you want to share the room with you? Mm-hmm. If you can't even go there, what I've done with some clients that are really blank is, okay, close your eyes and imagine, mm-hmm. visualize a room that you've been in that you really like. So one person came up with this hotel. You know, and the colors in the hotel and the lighting in the hotel, that's where she went immediately. So it started opening up the creative process for her. And it certainly helped me to be able to work with her. So, and then they start, you know, the client starts feeling better and better, you know, through that process. And
because creativity actually lifts depression, doesn't it? Because a lot of times when people are depressed, it's because everything is internally dark and color and excitement and the fact that they can see the result of their doing something.
Yes.
You're creative, you're expressing yourself.
That's
you're
right.
Depressed, you're not expressing
That's
yourself.
Right. That's right. And creativity, depression is like having a deadbolt lock on your creativity. So if you can find a way to kind of open the lock gently, you know, peek in there, peek
put
in the other side.
Put some of Ron's Pam on it.
Put some Pam on it, right.
Right.
Or it looks like butter, but it does, whatever that is.
That's right.
But so to get the juices going, this other story that I was going to tell you is this. It was a friend of mine, you know, at the time. I was doing some work with her, and I looked around her office. I said, I don't know, this is not you in here. She was subletting an office.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, there's not enough of you in here. Let's start bringing some little things. I started giving her gifts, actually, that spoke to who she was, whimsical things and just artifacts, and that started. And then she started thinking, I want to paint in here.
Mm.
And then we started doing the furniture, And we started doing the rug and the window treatment very slowly. And then once she got everything together, she realized she didn't want to be in that space anymore.
Oh, no kidding.
She actually, and it was a good thing, she actually realized through the process that she wanted to have her work at her home.
I love that story.
In a separate office in her home that she felt really, really good about. And then she started working, they started work, because it was a couple, started working with different rooms in the home. And she it has completely transformed her life.
Oh, I would
she
imagine.
Welcomes people in now. She's not in that other space
she's
that was never
to show
hers.
It all. She's comfortable in it.
She's proud. She knows she's participated in it.
And do you find that the husbands get involved sometimes or not?
Oh, more so sometimes.
Oh.
You think, oh, men have no taste. Men are just, you know, all numbers and books. I have lot of husbands will say, you know, can I please come down with my wife to the first tasting setting? We do, when we do a big, huge party, we set a table for them to come look at.
Mm-hmm.
With the tablecloth, the china, the food, the flowers, everything. So they see what they're going to get. And the husbands, mm-hmm. I mean, the husband's always first request is, you know, the centerpiece is too high, I need to see over it. I've seen men, will take them off of a table because that's too big, that disrupts the conversation. And be surprised how in tune to things men really are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About color and placement.
I agree.
And especially scale. Men are very good about scale. Don't think the centerpiece is a little too small? Don't you think the plates are too big? The chairs are too far back? I mean, men are very good about mechanical things
mm-hmm.
where, I mean, not that
and
females
comfort.
Aren't. But they want to be... They sit all day long in offices. They want the chairs to be comfortable. They're very into the total effect of the party,
and
the
you
big
know,
picture.
And also in the home, my husband has said to me and to others from time to time, I could live like a monk in a single room and I don't care. But then the first thing he says when anybody walks through the door is, look what beautiful things Joan has done to the house.
Well, look at our house.
He's so appreciative of what I've done.
Yeah, yeah.
Though if he weren't with me, we don't know what his room or his home would look like. So it's sometimes where you bring out something in the other person that they appreciate that they wouldn't have known about if you hadn't been in their lives.
Actually, Joan, to answer my end of the question about that,
yeah.
about families, is the first thing I will do is over the phone. You know, are you in a partnership? Mm-hmm. Are you married? What is anyone else living in the house with you? Actually, that's how I approach it. And yes, I've got my husband, I've got my kids. Are we going to be working on the kids' room? Are we going to be doing this?
Absolutely.
And then, so the first thing that I will do, if the husband wants to participate, and many do, and some don't, I sit down with them, and actually I approach it from both the psychological, emotional aspects of change in an environment, and what they need from each other during the process, because it can be very stressful.
Well, they say a lot of divorces happen over redecorating a
home. Right.
Building a home. Or
building a home.
That's right.
So, you know, we have to be treading lightly and compassionately so that each person is involved.
That's right, if they want to be. And that's where I always ask, you know, does the husband want to be or does the wife want to be? And then periodically we keep meeting together to keep the river as, you know, calm as possible. And then if there's kids in the home, I'm just a big believer of kids having what they want in their home, in their room. That's a safe way to experience and experiment with creativity.
Fantastic. Oh, wow. We could just go on forever, but we do have to get on with other business for the radio station. So we're going to have another segment coming up, and Ron's going to tell you about his experiences in China and his approach to design, how it's evolved over the years, and what happens in different parts of the country. Are all garden clubs the same, or are they very different? So stay tuned.
Invite your friends and family to listen to Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley every Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m., right here on KRXA 540. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues now on KRXA 540.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, back with you and back with Talking Matters. And we're talking today about how to make your life more beautiful. And we're talking with Ron Morgan and Rochelle Goodfriend. And Ron has consulted as an interior designer, owned floral and antique shops, and published two books, The Center of Attention and This Year in the Company of Flowers. And Rochelle is founder and owner of Spirited Spaces Design Consultants, a thriving business in the California Bay Area. And Ron, I'm so interested to have you tell the audience about your experiences in China and how we're talking now about how people can have silk flower arrangements in their homes. And of course, they don't die and don't have to be watered every day.
Which is a crime sometimes.
Which is a crime sometimes because then they stay around in the same place for 5 years. But there is a new art form because the flowers look so real.
Well, they're getting better and better.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's the Chinese are so amazing. They can make anything with their hands. They're so talented. They're just so meticulous about that. And I have had such good luck. A man came to me and said, "Please come to China. After watching me do flowers here, I want you to come. You have a perfect American sensibility of taste and everything in color. Come to China and design flowers for us." And I said, "You know, I have no desire to go up the Orient." So for 3 years, he kept chasing me to come, and I finally said, "Oh, what the heck? I'll go. And I went, and I thought, "Oh, God, isn't this wonderful?" And the people are so wonderful. I mean, their whole color sense is different than ours. Everything has to be bright and new and shiny and red and orange. And I'm saying, but in America, it's dulled down. It's grayed down. We want paler colors, washed out colors. The flowers need to look more real. You know, and I would take over and paint samples and paint and say, "This is what I want. This is the color." The biggest mistake most people make with artificial or silk flowers is that they don't use them like they're real flowers. They're afraid to bend them around and beat them up. Mm-hmm. I take a cigarette lighter sometimes and burn the edges of them to make them look a little bit old.
Oh,
or
yes.
Burn off all the little bitty stray silk fringe hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
You can take them, you know, and just hit them with a little bit of white spray wax to give them a little bit of a beige, dull color. Just different things to make them look older and aged.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people, you're afraid to cut the stems. You buy a 3 foot long silk tulip. You're afraid to cut it down to be a foot long to fit in your container. You'll bend the stem or just leave it as 3 feet. Here you see the scrapey glass container, and 3 feet above that's just tulip hanging out in the air. They're afraid to cut the stems and treat them like real flowers.
You have to be pretty strong to cut some of those. I've had those big wire cutters out more than once.
Listen, you're talking industrial strength, some of these things.
Right.
But it's been so much fun working there. And
the factory is how big?
There are 45,000 employees in this factory. Oh, it's enormous. It's like a city. It's like a miniature city. But so... probably 90% of the flowers in the world are made in this factory.
Amazing.
All the fake Christmas trees, all the fake garlands, all the fake wreaths you make.
And this
isn't
a city, is it?
It is. It's just part of. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
What used to be rice fields.
No,
it's an 8-hour trip out of Hong Kong up the river, then take a bus to here and a personal car out to here. But it's so fascinating seeing all this happen.
Oh, yes.
I mean, and I got lucky. I got tossed into the department that does all the catalogs for Christmas.
Oh.
So I got to design all the Christmas stuff for Pottery Barn, Target,
Williams-Sonoma,
Bergdorf's, Bloomingdale's, Hold Everything, all these companies that have all these fabulous Christmas wreaths and centerpieces and garlands and things for Christmas. I got to be in that department.
Like a kid in a candy store.
I had the best time. I had more fun because I love Christmas anyhow.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun being able to do it over there out of some of these artificial things and from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
See, now this, I would bring a piece of magnolia from here over and say, "Now look at this magnolia. It isn't just the green top. Look at the wonderful fuzzy brown back of it."
Oh, yes.
That's the part I want. Mm-hmm. I want that back to be sprayed with like a velvet coating to have that wonderful fuzzy brown back to it to contrast that with some of them done this way, shiny. And I brought over eucalyptus pods from California and said, "I want this gray-green color. That's what I need to see. That's what I want to use." I said, "And I don't want them to be so formal. Make them much lighter." Like, you know, everybody here makes wreaths and things by ourselves. What you can buy at the flower market here, these wonderful loose wreaths of eucalyptus berries and pepper berries and things, that's what I wanted to do, artificial looking without being artificial looking in China.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very successful. I haven't done it for the last year. I got kind of burned out. I mean,
you were there for three months.
I would spend a month here, a month in Hong Kong, a month here, a month in China. I spent 6 months, 1 month here, 1 month there. And it's just, I couldn't manage my own life and everything here with doing that much. I couldn't commit to enough. They wanted more time yet, and I could not commit to more time. So I've had a year off. But I have other plans not to go back. I have a huge collection. Being in the antique decorating business, I have a warehouse just full of, I have over 3,000 antique containers and things I've collected over the years. So now I'm working on a project to have a lot of them reproduced, fabulous old containers to put flowers into.
That'll be
doing
great.
Doing a whole Ron Morgan line of containers.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That, you know, people just, they're
you
always...
You can't find the right container.
You can't find the right ones.
Time.
There's a wonderful, probably one of the most fun stores I've ever seen was in Australia. And it was just called The Empty Vase.
Okay.
And it was a whole store full of nothing but containers to hold flowers. I thought, what a great concept.
Fabulous.
It was just called the Empty Vase. It was just a whole store full of nothing but containers for flowers. I thought, how fun, you know, what a fun thing to have.
Well, I don't lust after many things, but when I look in your books, I often lust after some of the containers.
People always say, oh, you've got the most gorgeous containers. They make the flowers. And no, they don't make the flowers, but they help. They're a good part of it. Yeah, I mean, finding a good container is like, you know, shopping for the right exact painting for your house. It all works together.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Now, what do you mean by the word tablescape? We didn't get to that earlier, but...
When I sit down at night at my house or someone's house for dinner, I consider that table like I'm in a room and environment. The flowers, the food, the plates, everything's a package deal. So when I sit at a table at my house or for a party, it's done. I mean, I take a lot of detail with the tablecloth, which does not have to matchy-matchy, thank God, and we never do that. But the tablecloth has a wonderful textural pattern that goes with the china. Mm-hmm. And I do not use a set of china.
No.
I use one dinner plate, a different pattern for... I have 250 sets of china in my house, so I'm just a pig when it comes to china. But it's all in pantries of green, yellow, pink, brown, orange. I can go and pull and mix back and forth. Then I do all the drudgery, all the cooking, all that kind of stuff. Then I do the centerpiece last, because that's the most fun for me.
Of course.
So I have something to look forward to at the very end when the table's finished, and I know what I've cooked for dinner.
Well, good strategy.
If I'm making, a lemon sorbet, fine, I'll have lemons back in the centerpiece. Mm-hmm. And before guests will come, I'll take a fork and scrape those lemons so there's a wonderful fragrance on the table at the same time.
Oh,
so, and food is, again, so chemical that a lot of flower fragrances are very damaging or very conflicting with food and wine. Mm-hmm. Like Casablanca lilies and gardenias, I adore them. Oh. But they're so strong, they fight the food and the wine. So, again, I put those, this will sound terrible, I put those in half Clorox and half water the night before I use them, so they have no fragrance.
Well, that's a good idea.
So it takes the fragrance away from them.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want anything to... I love cooking. I love eating. I don't want flowers to, interfere with what I'm cooking and doing.
And sometimes you can't even breathe if the scent is too
big. I just use the word tablescape because, it's the whole picture. It's like the square painting in the middle of the dining room that you're looking at. And again, most of us make a centerpiece standing up. You make it sitting down. You're going to see it from the side this way, not from the top. So when you make it, you're seeing the side view. And I make both sides a little bit different.
Well,
so
I like that idea.
A lot of times
too.
I will make guests, after the first course, you move over here and talk to somebody else. After the second course, you move here, you talk to somebody else. So you're not stuck talking to this, not stuck, but you're not there with the same person all night long.
It's a really
stuck
good idea.
Sometimes, it's fun to be able to talk to somebody else.
It is, definitely. Yeah.
And always for a party, I always insist on round tables. They're so much easier for conversation than square tables or long tables.
Oh, I totally agree. In fact, before we built this dining room, we always had a big round table in the other room, and I much preferred a round table for the conversation, but we just move people around sometimes to make up for the fact that
just
it's
make them
rounded.
Switch every now and again. This is fun. And it's part of the dinner party,
it is. Well, great stories, and we will be looking for your silk flowers in every catalog coming up. And we'll be right back because we're going to be talking to Rochelle, and she has some fascinating projects for the Sacred Heart School and Glide Memorial Church that you'll love hearing about. Her ingenuity and creativity about her 4-foot tulips are something I'm looking forward to hearing about as well. So be sure to stay tuned.
Ready for more? Log on to joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment here on KRXA 540. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues now on KRXA 540.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to Talking Matters, and it certainly does as we talk about how to make your life more beautiful. And Ron Morgan is here. He's based in Oakland and one of the most sought-after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States. And Rochelle is founder and owner of Spirited Spaces Design Consultants, a thriving business in the California Bay Area. And I've just been waiting to hear about this wonderful project you did, Rochelle, with tulips for the Sacred Heart School. I believe that's the name of the school.
Yes.
And, just tell us everything.
Okay. It was fun. I have to recall. It was a long time ago. So, but it was a really fun project. A friend of mine who had children at Sacred Heart really wanted to donate something for the silent auction. And he had this idea, being Dutch, that he wanted to do something around tulips and he wanted to hire me to do what he wanted. His idea was to have in the front yard tulips made out of wood.
Out of wood?
Out of wood. And for him to go early in the morning, a week before the auction, and put a stem up in the morning. He got permission from the school to do this.
How tall were these stems?
Well, they were like the 4 feet that we're talking about.
Okay,
they were wood stems. I'll backtrack on how this happened. And then the next day, he put one of the leaves up.
Oh.
And then the next day, the other leaf.
How clever.
And then he had, I think we had 50 of these.
50?
Yeah, we had 50. Wait, I actually think it was more. I think it was 100. It was 100. Filled this lawn in front of, you know, on Broadway and Webster, that
yes,
beautiful.
Huge,
it's the Flood Mansion.
Yeah,
it's the Flood
Several
Mansion.
Wonderful weddings there.
Gorgeous, yeah. So what he wanted to do was, he said, you do it. I've got the idea. You do it. I'll
execute
hire
it
you to
me.
Do it. Yeah. So I love to resource, and I love to research and resource and all that, and find people to do things where it's hard to find. So I got a name. It was really hard and challenging, but I finally got a name of a woodworker who lived in Sausalito, and I told him about the project. Could he make these tulips? And make a long story short with that, he said yes, he could make these tulips. It was really very challenging. They looked like, I mean, they were big tulips, you know, different.
Were they two-dimensional, three-dimensional?
They were, they were dimensional. They were like, the wood was like this, about 2 inches thick, mm-hmm. all the way around. And then in the stem, they cut places where the leaves would go.
Well,
and then on
in.
The top, yeah, to slide in, and on the top would be the bulb, the tulip bulb.
That's amazing.
And then what we did is we had the children come up with sayings, talk about personalizing, all the tulips had a personality. Come up with sayings for things that came to their mind, like, it's fun when school's out. Summer is coming around the corner. Spring is blooming. You know, all these different things. I love tiptoeing through the tulips. You know, all these things. And I got these really fun tags to put on and to put on the tulip. And then I went to Whole Foods because they had beautiful tulips at the time and got 5 different colors of tulips and then gave them to my assistant to paint the tulips.
Oh, wow.
The true color of these tulips with shading. So it wasn't just one-dimensional.
I'm almost drooling over
this. It was
just
so much fun. It was so much fun. And then, you know, kids would go to school. People would drive by
and they
would see a few more each day pop up.
How fabulous.
Pop up. And
it's like living art.
It was living art. They were sold. They went so fast. People were buying them very quickly.
Before the event, probably.
So that was just great fun. I love to be able to help people manifest their dream and something that they really want to see done. So it was really fun working together with him on that.
It's such a wonderful, clever idea for him to have in the first place, you know.
Oh, it's a great idea.
I'd love to see his house.
Great idea. It's really
great idea. And to see people catch on and do these things, like in Central Park, they did the orange frames, you know.
They were wonderful.
They were fabulous.
Right.
And it created an excitement in front of the school for your project, in Central Park for New York City. People flew in from all over the world to see this because it was only going to last a while and the tulips were only going to last a while. And it just needs the inspiration, the idea, the intention, and the
follow through. That's right. That's right.
And the money.
That's right. And I went to several places at first, you know, in the city, seeing who could do this. And they'd say, oh, you're never going to find a wood maker that's going to do a project that small. Oh, you're never going to find that. You know, you're going to have to outsource.
Somebody for everything. You can find somebody for everything.
So you just stick with it.
And I think this fun part of some of those, like you said, those projects too, is the fact that they are a fleeting glory.
Yes.
If those
yes.
tulips were there for 3 years, you're like, oh my God, those damn old tulips.
Right,
the fact they're there for a week and gone.
That's the fun of it.
This thing with the orange gates through Central Park.
Mm-hmm.
They were there for a week.
And
you know,
gone.
If you didn't get there and see them now, they're gone.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that was the excitement of it. You had to go now to do it. If you don't do it now, you'll never see it again.
Exactly.
That's kind of the fun of that kind of fleeting glory is what's so beautiful about it.
Well, not only that, but you do flowers for museum shows. And, of course, those arrangements are going to be gone once the flower show is over with. And that's wonderful because
people
go and see
them. Part of the beauty to me of flowers is the fact that they don't last forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the fact that it's here today, gone tomorrow. Appreciate me while I'm here. Mm-hmm. You know, love me while I'm here. Yeah. You know, think about me. You know, and you never can make the same arrangement twice. You want to find the same bent stem, the same color, the same flower. I mean, a lot of museums, the Boston Museum actually started it.
A lot of
museums around the country now are having bouquets to art in bloom, different names they call them, where different florists and floral designers will go in and do a flower arrangement to match or to complement or to as a takeoff of a painting or a piece of sculpture or something.
Great idea.
And then people, and they're raising a fortune. I mean, at the Young Museum here, we have probably the biggest and best one in the country. Our bouquet art here is phenomenal.
It is phenomenal.
They had 15,000 people the first day. The most people ever been in that museum in one day. 15,000 the opening day.
Gives me chills.
Oh. And some of them, I mean, it's so much fun to walk through and see what 300 florists do interpretation-wise.
Yes.
Some of them were breathtaking.
And yours too.
Mine was sense of humor.
Good. And what about Glide Memorial? What did you do with Glide?
Oh, I wanted to, I knew when I got into this business that I wanted to do some pro bono work. And I had, years ago, contributed at Glide doing their, you know, their hot meal serving at Thanksgiving, et cetera, and New Year's Day. So they were the first ones that came to mind. And I wanted to, I had this idea that I really wanted reception areas to be very welcoming. And I think there's a lack of that in most reception areas across the board with physicians. You know, they're thinking about other things. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't Kristen. So they're, you know, dentists, places where people go that they already come in with some anxiety. And wouldn't it be nice if you could provide a space that made them smile or relax?
Or the Green Hospital comes to mind.
Yeah. But so Glide came to mind, and I went over there and I saw, oh, you know, this needs work. And so many interesting people walk through those doors. Just so many people in need and so many people that are ready to give and all that. So I spoke with the director and, you know, all this. What I wanted to do were seasonal floral settings, seasonal, because we don't have, well, this year we have seasons. But anyway, so I wanted to do something like that, and we did that quarterly. And from that, from their Christmas one, we made, when you entered the building, we made a sign that said hope.
Oh, great.
And then over the director's office, there was a sign that said faith. And they've kept that. I don't know if they still have that up, but it was, you know, to bring in the new year with hope and faith and all that. So just to, you know, just to give it away and enhance other, you know, enhance welcomings.
Right. And so art and creativity can be one way of being generous in your life.
Very generous.
And to share this with other people is to share your gifts. And that sounds, you know, both of you have done that.
Well, they're kind of God-given talents, and it's nice to give something back occasionally.
Exactly.
You know,
I think
it makes me feel good doing it. I love doing some charity things and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And we all do. So we're going to come back for our last segment with these wonderful guests. And we're going to talk more about color and about affect and mood and family and all the makeover shows that are popular now, how do they affect us? Do stay tuned.
Ready for more? Log on to joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment here on KRXA 540. The conversation continues on Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley on KRXA 540.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, and back with Talking Matters and How to Make Your Life More Beautiful. And our wonderful guests are going to round out the show with us today, Ron Morgan, who is one of the most sought-after and well-recognized floral designers in the United States, and Rochelle is founder and owner of Spirited Spaces Design Consultants, a thriving business in the California Bay Area. So let's talk about these TV shows that people are finding so popular today about making over a whole home or a whole room in 48 hours. Of course, I mean, if I could do my house in 48 hours, I might do it every year. But this is a whole special thing that's been designed that is part of the culture today, I think, don't you?
I think that there's more and more. There is always a new show, like on HGTV particularly. Mm-hmm. There's always a new show. There's always a new angle to a show.
Angle to a show.
But what I've noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is I think there's been, I really think it goes back to the Twin Towers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because most people have found solace and serenity and comfort in their home. I mean, you notice right after that, the hotel business went down, the restaurant business went down. Home Depot started doing better. Home purchases, furnishings, all that actually went up. That's where people were spending their money.
Gathering
around the hearth. And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, if that may have been an incentive for there to be more shows. I think it's a positive thing. I don't think it's a negative thing because they do show very high-end shows, you know, very high-end homes. My 10-year-old loves these shows they show about on these
extravagant homes.
The extravagant homes, and I want that, you know.
I think
and
they're
I
want fun.
And
castle
the homes,
shows.
The houseboats.
It's a cheap house tour.
It's just totally fun, you know, the most extravagant or the most outrageous, whatever they call them these days. And then they've got Design on a Dime. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, doing a makeover for very little money. So I think they're speaking to different audiences.
Oh, right, exactly.
That inspire people to be able, like you were saying before, think outside the box. Think about, it's a little bit of a voyeur thing. You know, you get to go into other people's homes.
Peeking in somebody's house.
Peeking in the window. How do they do that? And what do they do? And how do they live? And what can they do differently? And what's
this design? When I was a little girl, all I wanted to do was see the inside of everybody's house.
Well, I think we all do. I mean, why do you think house tours are so popular?
Because
they sell house tour tickets like crazy. People are always dying to see what someone next door has that you don't have, or how, even if the house is built exactly on the same floor plan, mm-hmm. what they've done to what the Jew have done, the possibilities for their house. I think these shows are great because you get to see some really good ideas, and you think, oh, that's so bad. Everybody has an opinion.
Yes, everybody does.
Even in the same house with the same decorator. Oh, my God, that's awful, but isn't that fun?
Mm-hmm.
And the next person will say, you know, I liked the first thing, but I hated the second thing.
Exactly.
So everybody still has their own opinion to voice about it. And there's some very clever things to come out of it.
Well, I think so. And I also am wondering about another reason why it might be popular is because there's been a housing boom in this country. And because the price of your home is going up, you want to invest in your home because you don't exactly know what the stock market's going to do.
You can't afford not to.
So the real estate end of it.
And why not live in your investment is my question. I mean, enjoy it.
People are nesting. People are, you know, are now enjoying their own. I mean, there's a whole, I mean, I think, again, like the weather changes every 25 years or blah, blah. I mean, it's a cycle we go through.
Yes.
People are now nesting again. There's people are getting, young people now are enjoying their home. They're fixing them up. They're doing a lot of remodeling, a lot of extra bedrooms, adding on to, you know, fixing up. And they want, not necessarily what's the newest and the best, but what's, you know, and not necessarily the cheapest.
Right.
But, you know, and they don't want to do it all at once, I find most of them. They want, it's a step-by-step-by-step thing, which is kind of fun.
Well, it is fun.
We're going to be in this house for a while. Let's do the kitchen today. Let's do next year. And I encourage my clients when they come into the antique shop buying things, buy one good piece of furniture a year.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it you can get at IKEA, it's fine.
Right.
But buy one good thing a year. Just keep adding to it.
The quality and all that.
You know, in 4 or 5 years, you'll have a wonderful chest here, a wonderful mirror here. You'll have, keep adding to your collection. That's what a collection is.
Exactly.
You buy one thing here, go to flea markets. Best bargains in the world.
Right.
Go to antique shows.
And if you
shows,
did your you know? Kitchen and your bathrooms at the same time, you'd probably go crazy.
You have the same town two places. You got a good buy on it, you know?
Right.
If we go back to what we talked about earlier in the show about questions that people have themselves about what they should do, you know, what color they choose. They're not sure if that's okay, or they're afraid to do that, or should I get this furniture? And that's where a designer can, you know, coach people along, give ideas, you know, all that.
And what do you say about color?
Well, but what I'll go into that. I just want to finish this off about the home shows, because I think it gives people permission to begin experimenting on their own with their own creativity.
Correct.
Well, if that person
can
do a red velvet wall, or, you know, then I can do that. You know, it's a wall. It's a color. So if it doesn't work out,
it's
you know, and
it's not permanent in forever.
That's right. And they
it's
have you sort of see a more of a lightheartedness about design and decorating when you watch these shows.
Well, I think a lot of it being too sponsored by companies like Home Depot and Lowe's,
yeah,
who have made a fortune and everybody wanted to do it themselves.
Right.
I mean, all that got to be so expensive while having walls knocked out and painted and all this carpeting put in was so extravagant, young kids couldn't afford it.
Right.
Now, everybody's getting to do it themselves. Everybody's a handyman.
Oh, yes.
And I like that they have these wonderful classes there on how to wallpaper, how to stencil, how to foam marble, how to faux grain wood, all these classes on how to do things. And you'd just be amazed how many young kids you see there nowadays at those classes.
Well, for
how
sure.
How proper they are.
And also, growing up, I mean, it'll date us probably, but our grandparents never changed their houses from the minute we saw them as a toddler till the time that they passed away. And so it wasn't part of our consciousness.
Right.
Once the living room and the bedrooms were
done
the way they were,
good
it
point.
Was over with.
And a lot
good
of the furniture
point.
Was always it was handed down.
Yes,
Grandma
that's
had
true.
This that came to here, and my parents used to buy, you know, room suites.
Right,
you right, 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 right. You get the whole
the
thing.
The dresser and the drawer.
Oh, yeah, the dresser, the bed, the nightstands. It was a package deal. I mean, those days are over. I mean, most young kids nowadays, that's why there's so many good estate sales and good garage sales nowadays. Kids don't want the old furniture.
No,
when the parents
don't.
Die, they don't want it. They don't want this. Kids don't have the linens and the silver and the crystal. The kids don't want it. They don't have time to. People live differently.
They do.
There are no laundries to do the claws and things anymore. People don't have the inside, no house cleaners, maids to iron this or clean this. There's no. We're living much simpler.
Yeah.
So people
and
want.
The things that we choose to keep, we do take care of.
Right.
And that goes back to the eclecticism we were talking about earlier.
That's always fun having some mementos of the past,
right.
But not living in the past.
That's a great way to say it.
So you were asking a question about color. I just want to make
how
sure that we
how does color really affect us? What is it that makes us choose? Well, for instance, I have a pomegranate orange office, but I wouldn't want to put that color in any other room of my house. But in there, it gives me a zing to go in there and be on the computer and write or whatever else I do. But I wouldn't want that color in any other room that I have. So why is that?
Well, it seems like you want that boost of orange is a color that gives people energy.
Mm-hmm.
It does. You don't want it. You know, you don't want every single room in the house because you'll be bouncing off the walls.
Right.
You know?
But
it's the purpose of the room.
Yes.
You know,
that's
bedroom,
what I was going to say.
You want restful colors in a kitchen. You want cookable yellow hungry colors in. You know, a living room. You want more cheerful dining room. I love red dining rooms.
Yes, I do too.
Well, it's a good food color.
It's a good food color. It's a good person color.
It's a good
people
person
look good
color.
Against pinks. People look good against. I hate. Green dining rooms. I mean, that sounds awful, but you know, green's a draining. But green is.
Please tell us what you really think.
But green is a draining color to people.
It is.
At nighttime, it's a cold color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you sit against seeing you looking across a table, seeing a face against a green wall. The face drains.
But you're talking about a darker green wall.
Almost any green is pretty, unless it's a yellow green, that good.
I'm talking about the yellow green.
But I think, you know, maybe unconsciously, I mean, you said it very consciously here, but maybe unconsciously when you chose the color. You said it gives you a zing. Well, that's most likely how you want to feel when you step into your office.
Yeah,
Some people don't want to feel that.
It's a workspace. You need to feel zingy when you're working, you know.
Exactly.
I think that's the biggest trouble, too, with a lot of, like you said before, professional buildings. You look at the lobbies and think, oh my gosh, who would work in this color? How depressing is this? You see these pale blue little cubicles they work in and this awful gray carpeting. You think, oh, my. What a depressing place to work.
That's
why the turnout isn't as good. They find out
how
when they paint these places brighter red or brighter yellow. People react more
to the...
And
schoolrooms, I think, are not supposed to be
metal,
gray, green.
There's a whole psychology of color.
But let's go back to the commercial space that you're talking about because it brings to mind something that... A job that I just completed, actually. Mm-hmm. It was a real estate mortgage offices that were... that I remodeled and did all the color. And what they really wanted was to make, because buying a home is the biggest purchase you'll ever make, you know, generally they wanted people to feel very welcome, very relaxed, very inspired when they came in there. So, you know, listen to them. And they wanted their colleagues to be able to communicate more. So I just want to say, I consider those things, what they're telling me and what colors could fit.
Right.
The colors that they're...
So
the foyer is red.
Or for schoolrooms...
Don't paint up money green.
Right.
But you see, as we said when we even started the show, color affects every single
everything.
Part of our life.
Every part
food,
of it.
The color of food and the fact we can buy these interesting food colors to put into our flower displays. We really are living in a technicolor
fabulous
world.
Fabulous, colorful world.
And if we don't take advantage of the technicolor that nature has given us, and the new vegetables are giving us, the flowers are giving us, we're missing out. And we're not living as full a life.
Decide what colors are good for you, what colors you like, and, you know, work in that palette. You don't have to have every color in your house. That's a little crazy, too. But decide what's a good color you look good in. Most people know, I look good in pink, or I look good in green, I look good in browns or beiges or yellows. That's the color that you like so much. Use tints and tones and shades that in your house.
And that'll go around you.
You're going to be happy with that, because you're going to make you look better.
What does it feel like to you when you step in the room and you see that color?
Exactly. And so all of these examples is how to make your life more beautiful, which is what we've been talking about in our show today. And I can't thank you both enough for being here and making this a very technicolor show. We are so pleased, and hopefully one day you'll come back and talk to us again.
Thank you, Joan, and thank you, Ron.
It was great.
To everyone tuned in, thank you so very much for being part of our listening audience. Enormous gratitude to our informative guests, Ron Morgan and Rochelle Goodfriend. It's important for you to know that this show is co-created with our guests for your benefit, and for you to think about why talking in the way we're suggesting can matter to you. Tune in for our show next Saturday. Be sure to visit my website too, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. You'll find helpful, practical suggestions for your mind, body, heart, and soul. And if you'd like to comment on the show, don't hesitate to email me. You'll find the address on my website. Again, huge thanks to those who made this show possible today. Peter B. Collins, Christy Healy, and here in the studio, Jean Langmuir and Shane Sharkey. So in the meantime, keep talking and keep tuning in to Talking Matters, Saturdays at 3:00.